event or this conversation is evolving out of our relationship with the Turkish community and the Intercultural Dialogue Institute. So this is your chance. This is your chance to ask all those questions that you have about Islam and jihad that you're afraid to voice, or that you're reluctant to voice, or that you haven't known where to voice. This is the place and this is the moment. So we're going to have a presentation, and then that will be followed with a time of questions and answers. And so I'm saying that to you now so that you can, as things occur to you or as things bubble up inside of you, to take note of those things so that when we get to the question and response time, that you are ready to do that. And what was it Jesus said to his disciples? Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. We're here amongst friends. So I'd like to introduce to you this morning Malik Muradov, who's a very good friend of mine, and he will introduce our speaker. So Malik Muradov is the executive director of the Intercultural Dialogue Institute. It is an organization that's affiliated with the Hizmet movement that came out of Turkey and out of the work of Fethullah Gulen, who's an imam who's interested in having Islamic people give their lives in service to the world. So Hizmet has worked to build schools and hospitals, free and critical media, and these sorts of things. And the Intercultural Dialogue Institute is one of those projects. The Intercultural Dialogue Institute has a big highfalutin fancy mission. And under that umbrella of their mission, they bring together civic and religious leaders to be in dialogue with one another and to learn about Turkish culture and to bust down the barriers or impediments that we might have to cultures that we don't know. And I really have no idea what that highfalutin mission and vision statement says or does, because I know it like this. This is the mission of IDI: to cause world peace through friendship. And so I walk around in the world saying that IDI exists to cause world peace through friendship. So it's my pleasure to introduce the executive director of IDI and my friend, Malik.
I should hug you, too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Nice to see you. Thank you very much for having me here. My name is, as Laura said, Malik, and I am with the Intercultural Dialogue Institute. We are a nonprofit organization that promotes respect and mutual understanding among people that are different from each other in cultural, in religion, in ethnicity. So we want to have dialogues like this, interfaith dialogues, be able to ask the questions that you're, you know, normally cannot, and you don't know if you're, you know, if you're saying something wrong or if you're going to upset the person. So it's very hard, I understand that. And I also sometimes have questions and I cannot ask, because you need those settings where you're asked, you could ask your question, right? Then you can ask all of the hard questions that you have that you couldn't ask. So that's in mind. Intercultural Dialogue Institute is wants to be a platform for everyone. So we want to do interfaith activities. We do not represent Islam or Christianity or other or the ethnicity. So we want to be open for everyone to be able to join and contribute. So talking with Laura, she told me this situation where people do have questions, and I understand it totally. And we thought like we could hook it up with the Anatolian Turkish Islamic Center, and then they could present about Islam. They can speak as a Muslim, and then we could have that dialogue going. And with that, I would like to introduce you two people. One is Ahmet Bozdemir. He is my colleague at the Intercultural Dialogue Institute, and he will be leading many of the programs upcoming. And also, I would like to talk about Fatih Sezgin. Can you wave? Thank you. So Fatih is from Anatolian Turkish Islamic Center, and he is a scholar. He says he used to be a scholar, so we'll get to that. And in political Islam and Islam and democracy topics in Turkey. So he did his research about this very topic, the holy war, jihad, political Islam. So he will be talking about that. And I would like to invite him up and ask if he can tell us a little bit about his educational background in this matter, and then also how he ended up in Canada. And then from there he could get into the topic of the jihad and Islam and democracy. So please welcome Fatih Sezgin.
Thank you so much, Abi. Hi, everyone. I am really happy to be here with you. I will try to say something about, let's say, misinterpreted, misunderstood term jihad. First of all, I think, give short information about myself. My name is Fatih Sezgin. I came from Ankara just 7 months ago. I was a lecturer at Turgut Özal University. It was a private university. I had finished my PhD dissertation, just waiting to submit it to the jury. But, you know, after the failed coup attempt, the government shut down 21 universities, and mine as well. So my dissertation in my hand, and with no degree, I had to leave the country. I left Turkey on the 28th of July, I mean just 2 weeks after the coup attempt. My family is still in Turkey. I have two kids. My wife was an English teacher. Her teaching license was cancelled. She was detained for 2 or 3 days. The only accusation is that, why did you work in that school? Why did you send your kids to that school? I think there is no need to give detailed information about the political issues in Turkey. Now I am here. I am trying to survive. I am really happy to be here because, you know, we suffered in our country, in parentheses, from Muslims. They call themselves as political Islamists. And here I am here. I am in Canada. And I am really happy to be here with these people who are more tolerant, who are, let's say, really eager to help the newcomers. Thank you again for everything. I will try to, as I mentioned, say something about jihad, but believe in me, it's going to take more than 10 hours to speak about jihad in details. Because this is the first part of my dissertation, my thesis. First of all, I am not a chaplain. I will just try to give an accurate approach to jihad in real Islam. You know, there are many interpretations about Islam. Especially there are many Islams. When you speak with a person from a country or a ethnic group, they say or they give information about Islam, but it's totally a different Islam compared to another one's Islam from B country or C country. So what I want to try to, let's say, do is give, as I mentioned, the accurate definition of jihad and its practice. Then we have a short video clip. It is about 17 minutes or something like that. It gives the modern approach to jihad and its practice in 21st century. So I will just repeat one sentence and then go on the rest. I am not a chaplain. Here I am just an academic. I will try to give an overall information because it is a really complicated issue. So first of all, in all religions, we need a religious war law. What I mean is that, for example, religious, we all know that are sent by God, by our Creator. For what? To guide us in this life. Otherwise, it will be impossible for us let's say, to behave when we come across to some issues. For example, if there isn't a holy book for me, I cannot know how to behave my wife. I cannot know how to behave towards my neighbors. I cannot, let's say, know how to teach or what to teach my kids. But my religion guides me and tells me how to behave, because I was born, for it is A point. I am going to die, that is the B point. There is a line between A and B. So I should walk on that path. I need a guidance. That one is religion. And in daily life, even if we want or not, sometimes we have conflicts. Sometimes, again, we don't want, but we have wars. What are we going to do in these wars? For example, we have prisoners. We are in a war, we have prisoners. How are we going to behave to this? Are we going to kill all of them? Or are we going to give them flowers? What should we do? So we need a war law, because it's going to tell us, it's going to tell us how to behave in a war, how to behave in a conflict. So we need this war. Otherwise, we are going to see many massacres. We are going to see many genocides. We are going to have big problems, because the people will not know what to do when they are in a war. What if we don't have a religious war law? Then, as I mentioned, everyone is going to create his or her own war law. So we need a war law in all religions, and we have. In all religions, we have a war law. For example, here I just got some, let's say, small samples. For example, in Bible, there are some topics like this. Why must human life be respected? What is the reason? Why is human dignity important? And it gives examples. Then what kind of punishment may be imposed? If it is a must, what kind of punishment? We should know. Otherwise, it's going to be a big problem. Then, in case of war, what does the moral law require? Because there are many different circumstances in a war. We should know what to do. Then, in Judaism, again, we have same things. So, you see, it says the war is to be fought only by those who are, it goes on. It gives some criteria. It doesn't just let you do whatever you want or whatever you think. It gives you some criteria. And of course, we have religious war law in Islam. The first topic is that conflict should be avoided whenever is possible. That is the first criterion. And these are the verses from Quran. But turn away from them and say peace. God wants us to behave in this way. So, if you are about to choose two options, the first option must be peace, no war. The priority is not war. The priority is not, let's say, fighting or killing the others. Whenever it is possible, peace should be chosen. Then, but if the enemy is inclined towards peace, do you also incline towards peace? And trust in Allah, trust in God, for He is the one who hears and knows all these things. It's again from Quran, the holy book. So we have a lot of, let's say, verses like this. They all in general say that conflict should be avoided if possible. But when I say these things, I am sure that you are just thinking of the current or present situation in Middle East or Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Taliban, there are many terrorist organizations. And they say that their motivation is Islam. And in Islam, the motivation is jihad. We are going to speak about them. Then, the permission is given to fight only in self-defense. Only in self-defense. You see another long verse again from Quran. It says, if there is a problem, if there is a danger about your self-defense, and the second sentence is important, if there isn't any other way, then you are permitted. Otherwise, it is impossible. It is impossible. Then again in Quran, it says how to, let's say, treat to the prisoners of war. These are from Quran. And of course, there are some other verses. For example, I spoke with some friends from different religions, and they say in Quran, in the second biggest surah, Suratul Baqarah, it says, whenever you come across an unbeliever, kill them, they say. But we should know that I read all that verses. I read in details. I read their interpretations. First of all, we should know that if you take just one verse from Quran and try to understand it, believe in me, you are going to misunderstand it. Why? For example, in Quran, there is a verse. It says, don't perform namaz. You know, Muslims pray 5 times in a day. Don't worship. Don't perform or don't pray. But then another sentence or verse comes. When you are drunk, if you just take the first part, then you are going to say, Allah orders me not to pray. So, first of all, we should know that it is for 3 religions. If we want to understand one verse, want to understand the meaning, the real meaning of a verse, first of all, we should understand the circumstances that it came for. Otherwise, we are going to have a lot of problems. Don't pray. No need. But he says, when you are drunk. So, this point, I think, should be underlined. It's very important. Then we go on. And they, the believers, feed for the love of Allah and the indigent, the orphan, and the captive. You know, the first war of Islam is Badr War. Some people say Badr, there are different pronunciations. Anyway, in Islam, as I mentioned, the first war is Badr. The people of Mecca, captured all Muslims' belongings, including their properties, their horses, camels, whatever comes to your mind. And then, the Muslims came to Prophet Muhammad, and they said, you see, he captured whatever we had. They captured whatever we had. Why don't we do anything? And he said, we are waiting an order from God, from Allah. Then Allah sent a verse to Prophet and said, okay, if your all belongings are captured, go and speak with them about peace or about giving them back. But they didn't accept. And they declared war. So the Muslims tried to be prepared for the war. But some Muslims, they were new Muslims, they didn't want to participate in. Then another verse came. It says, why don't you join jihad? So, if you take this verse just to 21st century, you are going to say, it is a commandment from God. And he says, why don't you? It means, do it. So, this point is important. Otherwise, we are going to misunderstand everything. And after the Badr War, the Muslims defeated the enemy. And they, let's say, had some war prisoners. And the Prophet spoke with prisoners and he said, do you know reading or writing? I mean, are you literate? Some people said, yeah, we are literate. And he said, if you teach 5 Muslims how to read and write, then I will let you go. These are in practice. But now, especially in some Muslim countries, in the end I will say whether we have a Muslim country or not, it's another issue. They say, okay, we have some verses from Quran. They all say, fight with unbelievers. Kill them. We are going to discuss later. And these are the, let's say, words of Prophet Muhammad. He says, do not kill any old person, any child, or any woman in a war. Then, do not kill the monks in monasteries, do not kill the people who are sitting in places of worship. It is forbidden. I know that in some countries, they kill priests, they kill, let's say, some religion people, and they say that they do it for sake of God. No, God and his messenger, they forbid it. Do not attack a wounded person. No prisoner should be put to the sword. Do not destroy the villages and towns. Do not spoil the cultivated fields and gardens. And do not slaughter the cattle. These are all from the Prophet of Islam. Those who entrap Christians and Jews will answer to me on Judgment Day, and those who do injustice to Christians and Jews will not be able to enter paradise. You know, in all religions, the final, let's say, goal, objective, or target, destination, whatever we call, is paradise. If God is satisfied with us, we are happy. And the price for this is paradise. And the Prophet himself, he says, if you do these things on Judgment Day, it will be impossible for you to go to paradise, to go to heaven. But I will later give information about what jihad means. But before that, why is jihad blamed too much? Because, you know, after 9/11 incident in U.S., it was, I think, accepted almost by all people that jihad is the motivation for Islamic terrorist groups. Then it was blamed. People tried to understand jihad in Quran, in Holy Book. As I mentioned before, they read the verses about jihad and they said, oh, we got the point. Quran itself, in other terms, Islam itself, just orders killing people or to kill people. So it is a motivation for terrorist organizations. You know, in France, I think it was last week, we had a really sad incident. He was Muslim. In London, there was a subway attack, I think many years ago, 9/11 in US. They are all Muslims. They are all Muslims. When you put all these examples in a big, let's say, basket, you see they, okay, there is a problem with this religion because the sociology of this religion is still producing terrorism. And it is very interesting. In my dissertation, I had some interesting data. Approximately, it is considered that there are 20,000 fighters in ISIS, more or less 20,000. 4,000 people are from Western Europe, and they are new Muslims. They converted from Judaism or Christianity to Islam. 5,000 people are from former Soviet Union. And there are some interviews with fighters from Western Europe, European countries. Why did you join in ISIS? The answer is that I tried to become a real Muslim. I read everything about Islam and I understood that there is a missing part in my, let's say, religion. What is that? Quran says, fulfill your duties. And one of them is jihad. So I came to Syria, I joined in ISIS just to fulfill that duty. You see, a misinterpretation and the loss of many lives. Because they just want to be a good Muslim and they think that that is the only way. Because it is misinterpreted, it is misunderstood. It is very interesting, especially during the late of 19th century, there were many wars in the Middle East. In, let's say, Ottoman empires, Hitlerland, there were many wars. For example, in Algeria, in Egypt, in Ottoman Empire, in India, there were many wars. And for the first time, jihad was used to motivate people to fight with these, let's say, imperialist countries. And it is very interesting. There was a success against imperialism in Algeria, India, Egypt, and Ottoman Empire. And this success inspired many terrorist organizations in Middle East. And they thought that if we do the same, in parentheses, if we use Islam just to motivate these people, we are going to have the same success. So Islam became a tool. They used Islam. You know, in Turkey, when you speak with a Turkish guy, he or she is going to tell you, 90% of the Turkish population is Muslim. At least they, let's say, identify themselves like this. For example, even if they don't, I'm speaking about the people in Turkey, even if they don't have headscarf, veil, hijab, whatever you call, they respect to the ones who have it. For example, even if they don't go to mosques, they respect a lot to the mosques. What I want to say is that religion is very important in a daily life. So, if you use that power, you can do whatever you want. You know, Tayyip Erdogan, our officially new dictator, he used Islam. He's still using Islam. And up to now, he has lost no elections, no referendums, nothing, because he used Islam. And he addressed just to the ignorant people. And that people do not know their religion in details. They just respect to the symbols, headscarf, mosque, flag, Quran, and other things. So, as it is written here, after the success in these countries, this success inspired many terrorist organizations. And unfortunately, they did it. And this is the new motto for many terrorist organizations. Okay, imperialism may be over, but it is still in 21st century in a different form. What's that? Cultural and economic imperialism. Then what should we do? Okay, brothers, sisters, let's come together and fight against this imperialism. They are using this one. I visited a lot of countries, Islamic countries. Whenever you speak with just an ordinary person about these issues, they say, we have these resources, that resources, but the imperialist people, with our puppet rulers, they take it. So, what is the solution? We are going to fight against them. Is this the only solution? Yeah, that is the only solution. The perception is this. So, after all this, let's get into jihad as a term and the meaning. Jihad is an Arabic word. It is derived from jahada. That is the root of jihad, jahada. It means to strive, to make an effort, to do your best. But it is very interesting. It doesn't have a meaning of killing or other issues. For killing, in Quran, another word is used. It is qatl in Arabic, qatl, to kill. But jihad is not, let's say, used in the meaning of killing others. But it is misunderstood. That is the only problem. If you do your best, if you do your best for your religion, then you are doing jihad. For example, your neighbor is not, let's say, able to walk. If you buy a wheelchair for her or him to come to church, mosque, synagogue, then you are doing jihad. Because there is an obstacle between that person and God. You just get that obstacle. That is jihad. That is the real meaning of jihad. You are going to make the human being and God to meet. That is the real meaning of jihad. And the Quran, the holy book, defines jihad as the effort made to remove obstacles that stand between humanity and God. That is the real meaning. All the others, they are interpretations. That is the real meaning. A family is very poor. They cannot afford to send their kids to school. If you help them, you are doing jihad, according to real Islam. If you give food to your neighbors, again, it is jihad. It has a very broad meaning. very broad. But you see, it is just associated with killing, terrorism, and other issues. It is very interesting. There are 6,234 verses in Quran. Jihad is mentioned 41 times. So, there is a very famous Pakistani Islamic scholar. His name is Fazlur Rahman. His studies are really appreciated in academic world. He says, 96% of Quran is about practice. There is nothing about state. I mean, the form of state. There isn't. Because the real Quranic or Islamic perspective just focuses on human beings, individuals, not systems. If you educate individuals in a, let's say, good way, that individuals are going to come together and create a perfect system. You don't need a system first. First, good people, educated people. Then, that people, it's up to them. They are going to create their best ruling system or governmental system. It is very interesting. There are two aspects of jihad. The first one is called as the greater, in other words, spiritual jihad. What is that? Fighting to overcome your unwanted or unaccepted desires and evil inclinations. That is the greater jihad. That is the most important one, in other words. What is the other one? The lesser jihad, encouraging others to achieve the same objective and the one that you can do with materials. I will give detailed information. This is very important. The Muslim army was returning from Medina after defeated the enemy. You can find this in all books. When the messenger told them, "We are returning from the lesser jihad to the greater one," the Prophet himself says this. War, battle is not the greater jihad. The greater jihad is the one that you do with yourself. When you just give, in Islamic terminology, we say hadith. It is our Prophet, let's say, sayings, hadith. When you say this hadith to some radical Muslims, they say, "You are giving harm to Islam." Why? Because if you say this, the people will not fight against the others. But that is the reality. That is the reality. Because I am responsible for myself. I will be judged on judgment day, as Fatih says, not with Mr. Malik, with Mr. Ahmed. They are not, I mean, the God is not going to judge me about his, let's say, doings in the world. He's going to tell me, "Fatih, why did you do this, that?" So I am responsible for myself. So greater jihad is the one that you are doing, let's say, against your wishes. Yeah, as I mentioned in the previous one, the greater jihad is the spiritual one. We have in all religions, just the names are different. Because, first of all, we should get rid of our unwanted or evil desires. The greater jihad is conducted on the spiritual front, for it's our struggle with our inner world. As this is a very difficult and strenuous jihad, it is called the greater jihad. It's really difficult. It is really difficult because the life is, let's say, not something that we can predict before. Every day we have different problems, we come across with different people. It's really difficult to keep ourselves in a true path. So it is important than the other one. What is the lesser jihad? The lesser jihad is material. The lesser jihad, but at the same time, is not restricted to battlefronts, for this would narrow its horizon considerably. So sometimes a smile, or let's say a help to others, just a hand for a person who is in need, is also a lesser jihad. When we say lesser jihad, again, fighting in, let's say, battlefields is understood. No, it also has a broad meaning. So, as I said before the presentation, it's a really complicated issue. Now, I am trying to summarize all the things I mentioned or I spoke about. The first one, these are Islamic, real Islamic rules. Individuals cannot declare war. This is important. A group or an organization cannot declare war as well. It is not my duty, it is not your duty to declare war, let's say, against others. It is the duty of a state. But that state has to have a president, has to have a system. If the state declares war and then calls you for joining it, then you can do it. Otherwise, as an individual, it is impossible to declare war for others. Otherwise, it's an act of terror. And that is another point. Some people say, okay, that country in Middle East or that one in that region, they declared war against U.S. You know, they blame U.S. for everything. That is the reality. An Islamic world doesn't really exist. What do we mean by an Islamic world? For example, the names of many countries, they start with Islamic Republic of. No, that is just a name on a plate. We don't have such a world. We don't have an Islamic world. There are places we can say where Muslims live. In some places more, in some places few. But we don't have an Islamic country. Not an Islamic world. We don't have an Islamic country. Because let's speak about Saudi Arabia, Iran, and others. Yet they call themselves as Islamic countries. But in practice, no. They are not Islamic countries. Because whatever is forbidden by Islam is practiced in their daily life. So, we can also say that a Muslim culture is dominant rather than Islamic culture. For example, I am working at a restaurant as a server. Many people are coming. And let's say, I also hosted you. some people come and you can understand, okay, they are Muslims. They come, they eat. After they finish, they call me, brother, yes, is it halal? You mean the food is halal? And I say, why didn't you ask before eating? You have finished. Does it matter whether it is halal or not? So, he or she has to ask that question just for satisfaction. Because he or she knows that if she doesn't ask that question, she's not be, let's say, comfortable or peaceful in mind. Just as I mentioned, symbols. No practice in real life. No practice. Some people still eat with hand, and they say it is sunnah. It was advised by Prophet of Islam. Some people, you see, they have long dresses and let's say big beards. And when I speak with them, they say it is sunnah. It was advised by our Prophet, because our Prophet used to be like this. There is a famous movie about the Islam's Prophet life, Messenger. I don't know whether you have watched or not. And I said, have you ever watched Messenger? Yeah, I watched many times. Good. In that film, all the Muslims and the people who are against them, for example, some figures are Abu Jahil and Abu Sufyan and others, they all have the same clothing. So can it be something traditional? Because the unbelievers and the believers, they have the same way of clothing. You just bring the way of clothing to 21st century, but no spirit inside. Just the symbols. Just the symbols. So, when some people say Islam orders, or Quran orders, or my God orders, we should think twice. Because they are trying to live their culture, not the real Islamic culture. On Fridays, I am living in downtown. I met some guys, they are from Pakistan, Afghanistan. I tried to do something for them because they are a bit radical people, they are Muslims. And I invite them to my house on Fridays just to have tea, cookies, and speak some about some issues. It was, I think, 3 weeks ago. We were again speaking with them. They were a bit radical, but now, thanks to God, they are okay. And I said, next week I will visit Jack and Catherine. Is it just a visit or dinner, something like that? One of them asked. Yeah, we are going to have dinner together. Are you sure? Yeah, why not? What's the problem with that? He said, brother, at the beginning of the dinner, you are going to keep your hands and you are going to pray. Are you sure? What's the problem with praying? Is it something bad? But they are Christians. But the God is same. He hears everything. And I went to dinner. It was a really good dinner. We did the same. They prayed for me. I prayed for them. Anyway, 1 week later, we were again together. He asked, brother, how was the dinner? I said, it was as you described. He was a bit shocked. Did you pray with them? Yeah, I prayed with them. And did they drink wine? Yeah, they drank. And you said nothing. I had to say nothing. Why? Because it is this, that. I said, you see, we are drinking tea. Whenever we come together, we drink tea. And whenever they come together, they drink wine. What is the difference? What is the difference? So, when you just think of this short conversation, or let's say sample, you can easily understand. They are not aware of the Islamic rules. They are just trying to put into practice their traditions as Islamic rules. That is the main problem. You know, there is no waste in creation. God created us for what? For suffering? No. He created us for, let's say, an objective. And it's very interesting. I will again show it here. In Quran, God says, I created you in different tribes, comma, different races, comma, ethnic groups, etc., etc. Then, for what? To know each other. To know each other. If you don't come together with people from other faiths, how are you going to know each other? Is it possible? On Skype, on other, let's say, social networks? No. No, because according to Islamic belief, my father is Adam, my mother is Eve, so we are all brothers and sisters. Paradise is not created just for me or for Muslims. What about the rest? They are all for hell, and paradise is just for some people. No. No. So, I was just speaking about the Islamic culture. Unfortunately, we don't have an Islamic culture. We don't have an Islamic culture. So, in Islam, if you have an objective, if you have a goal, the way that you walk to your goal also has to be according to your religion. What I mean is that, imagine that you want to build a new house, but you need 3 or 4 meters, let's say, more from your neighbor's area. You cannot play tricks on him. Even if you build mosque or church, you cannot. But I am doing this for God. No. The way you walk must be also Islamic or which religion you belong to. That is very important. Especially in Turkey. You know, we have a referendum. The ruling party, they stole a lot of votes. And when you spoke, we are the representatives of Islam. We have to be in the position of ruling this country. So whatever we do is okay. No. No. We cannot accept such a way or such an understanding. In Islam, human life is more important than everything. Human dignity is more important. Is more important. And another point, there is no claim in Islam to make the whole world Muslim. But some people say we do jihad for this objective. No. Islam itself doesn't have such an objective. You see, it is again from Quran. With something that is better. With something that is better that you are faced with. And it is very interesting. There is no compulsion in religion. So you cannot put your gun on one's head and say, convert to Islam. No. Islam itself rejects it. These are from Quran. Okay, these are the last words. Then we are going to watch our video. A Muslim cannot be a terrorist. A terrorist cannot be a Muslim. No need to interpret it this. It is as easy as this one. The people, they are killing people for sake of God. They are saying, Allahu Akbar, Allah God is the greater, and they are killing people. No. If you are a Muslim, you cannot be a terrorist. If you are a terrorist, please, you are not a Muslim. It is again from Quran. It is a verse. If anyone kills a person, then that act means he killed all mankind. So I'm sure that you are just thinking the terrorist organizations we mentioned before and all other things, and there is a dilemma between the things I told you and the others. But that is the reality of Islam. That is the real Islam. The real Islam. There is a scholar. He is in exile in US, Fethullah Gülen. I think you have heard his name. Many radical Islamic group leaders do not accept him as a Muslim. Why? Because he has the same clothes just like me. He doesn't have a beard. And he says, please come together and be tolerant towards others, accept the others, something like that. They don't. They don't accept him as a Muslim. It was, I think, 1999, Fethullah Gülen said that headscarf, veil, hijab is not an essential part of Islam. They declared a war against him. Because there are five pillars of Islam. Five. If you fulfill these five, then you are a Muslim. Among them, we don't have hijab. There are six pillars of faith. Faith, again, we don't have hijab. But it is a very important political symbol. They lead people. They lead the crowd with this. So, as I mentioned, it's a really complicated issue. But I tried to just give an academic and overall, understanding of jihad. Now we are going to watch our movie. Thank you so much for your patience. I hope I could tell something about jihad, Islam, and other issues. As I mentioned, you know, we need 10 hours. Neither you nor me, we don't have that time. Thank you so much.